And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, 106 in the afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki alongside with Bridget Riedel, our wonderful, talented Ag Director. Our other meteorologist came down with the 1-9er. His whole family has it, so he'll be out for a few days.
No, thank you.
He'll be out for a few days.
You know, it finally cooled off. The temperature is nice, and he is laid up at home. So best of luck, Justin. Yes. Hope you're good.
Well, especially when the whole family has it. That's even, especially his little kiddo. That's the worst.
Yuck.
I mean, ugh, man.
No thanks.
Right? Yeah, we've got we got some rain falling in the area right now. In fact, most of this is along and south of the 94 corridor. We're looking at some rainfall amounts right now. Let's see, Wahpeton, you're at about a little under a half inch. Further south, Sonora, about a buck 40. Brampton has about a buck and a quarter. Over toward Edgeley, a buck and a third. You go up towards Jamestown, you're only looking at about a tenth of an inch. A little closer to home, Prosper is at 0.2 inches. Castleton, a little over a quarter. We've got a little over 0.2 inches here at the station. And on the other side of the river, from Ulin over towards Moorhead and Sabin, about 0.17 inches. You go out towards Lakes Country and Otter Tails, checking in with about 0.25 inches, but much heavier rainfall. Herman, Minnesota, Elbow Lake over towards Westport, looking at 1 to 2.5 inches of rain down there. But you go north, Grand Forks, just 0.01 inches. So most of this was along and south of the 94 corridor. So much needed rain. I'll tell you, my lawn was getting a little bit crispy, a little bit,
Well,
that's the best way to put
it. And we're getting it. This is not a hard pounding rain.
No.
So that's a good thing. We're not getting washouts, et cetera. When you mentioned places like Brampton and so forth in the southeast corner of the state, actually, they have been wet, but this sounds like something that they're still going to be able to make it manageable. Those drown out spots in the field, not getting any smaller, I'm afraid, in that region. But how long are we going to keep getting rain? Am I going to be able to head outside here at 5 o'clock and enjoy the day, or what's that going to look like, Dean?
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a very good $1 million question you have there, Bridget. You're right on top of it for this rainy Monday morning. We've got the back edge of the rain. Oh, it's about a half hour or so just to the southwest and west of the FM area. Now, areas into Lakes Country, we will hold on to the rain a little bit longer, but we'll call for those showers continuing for about another hour before they start to diminish. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of, or at least a few peaks of sun towards evening hours before the sun goes down. That should allow us to get close to 70, but we'll be stuck in the 60s as we are right now. We're at 64 degrees here at the studio, so we're not going to move much. And then tonight, partly cloudy, could see some patchy fog, especially in areas of the heavier rainfall totals. And then as we head into Tuesday, that looks to be the pick day of the week, with temperatures on Tuesday coming close to 80 before more rain comes back into the forecast for Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday evening. So not a bad looking forecast.
There goes our humidity.
I know. Yeah. But at least the temperatures are pleasantly cool in the 70s for the most part this week. And if you're a fan of the summer heat, it'll be back. As we've been saying, it'll be back by mid-month. So just let's enjoy this week the cooler weather.
Well, we'll take what we can. We know that we want some heat because our corn crop still would like to see it. In fact, I anticipate being out in our particular field for our Here We Grow project, where we're custom farming 20 acres of corn north of Glendon, Minnesota. I'll be out there Thursday, take a little look around, see what that field looks like, how we're progressing. But much like, as I've been told by others, our corn looks same height and size and so forth as much of the rest of the corn in the region, and things are moving towards harvest. We're very happy to see that. And part of the thing I want to talk about with folks is all of this rain that we've had. What does corn need for water? Let's talk about its water requirements and so forth. And the reason we want to do that is we have Dairyland Seed. They're one of our project sponsors in the field. Dairyland brought us a great quality hybrid that we planted this year, and we're still anticipating really a nice yield as we get closer and closer to our harvest season. So we'll see where that leads us. But thanks again to Dairyland Seed for being just one of our many sponsors.
And Bridget, with us getting an early plant for the most part on our corn crop, does that mean an earlier than normal harvest or just earlier than some other areas around us?
Earlier than some other areas around us. I don't think I'm going to get too worried that we're having an early harvest at this point. Okay. Remember, I'm on team frost-free till November 1st.
Boy, you're asking a
you
lot.
You have to do
you're
that.
You're asking a lot. How about mid-October?
I know.
What's wrong with mid-October?
I think there's some corn out there that needs just a little bit longer.
Okay.
I mean, we have stuff that's not even a black layer yet. We got to get it there. We got to keep pushing it along.
We'll try and push till November 1, but yeah.
Okay. We'll do what we can.
As long as we don't have a Halloween surprise.
Well, we did last year, but we got past that, right? Then we didn't get a bunch of snow after that. So that really helped us out.
Right, right. Oh, man. So who do we have? As our guest today?
I have a lot of stuff. Even before we get to our guest, who, by the way, just a heads up to Addison, our sound engineer. Our guest is working to get her camera situated. She may have to give you a call, Addison, to make sure all of that stuff is taken care of.
I see her. She just connected. So it looks like she should be good to go.
Okay, so we got that taken care of. She says she has figured out. Okay, so here's all the other things that are going on that I want people to be aware of. First of all, we got a call on Friday from Ken, who was out in the field. He's talking about his hay crop, and he said, if I remember right, Ken, and I'm paraphrasing, if I get this wrong, you are welcome to call us back on the Red Wing Shoe line at 701-293-9000. But what Ken was mentioning was that they're on second cutting of alfalfa and they were seeing mold underneath the swaths. And he was concerned, what have they been losing for protein, et cetera? So I went ahead and reached out to a beef production specialist. Actually, his name is Dr. Warren Rushi. He is at South Dakota State University. And he said, if it was him, flip it, see if you can get that bottom of the swath completely dry. Not going to work on a day like today where it is currently raining, and Ken may have already gotten that swath picked up and baled by now. He said he really doesn't have a lot to share about baling or ensiling other than with mold. The silage would have less dust if they were doing that versus baling, but a preservative or inoculant could help with either case. It may have some nutrient loss. That's more than likely. Don't really know how much. Once that hay is harvested, if he's baling it and siling it, et cetera, what they can then do is take it to the NDSU Vet Diagnostic Lab, and they will run a screening for mold or mycotoxins just to see what it looks like. That forage is likely still usable, but they may have to dilute it out with some other feeds. So, Ken, if you're listening, I hope that helps. If I did not get your question completely right, again, you can email me, ag@flagfamily.com. And I would be more than happy to help answer that for you. Other things that I have gotten just like this morning. It's been a busy morning, Dean. I don't know about you in the weather center, but holy
it
cow
has
over
been.
Here. Okay, over here in the ag department, Castleton's soybean crush plant is about to begin operations. In fact, they are having a celebration this Wednesday, August 7th from 10:30 to 11:30. That is for state, local, federal officials. There'll be remarks from the company and so much more. If you are a local farmer, producer, and you want to tour the plant, you are welcome to join them in the afternoon. There'll be a public open house at 5:00. So for those who want to see the flow, what's it going to be like when a truck comes in, dumps, and then moves on through the facility? And where do the soybeans go after they come off the truck? They want to be able to show you that. This state-of-the-art facility has 125,000 bushel per day capacity. It will produce soybean oil, meal, and soy hull pellets. They are estimated that it will process 42.5 million bushels of soybeans in its first year alone. So if you are interested, that is, again, this Wednesday, August 7th. You are able to be there in the morning for the press conference, et cetera, at 10:30. But the open house for producers and the general public, that's more in tune to what you want to see. That'll be at 5:00. Okay, that's just a couple things. I've got one more. I had one more listener question that came in, and that was related to soybean aphids. We talked about soybean aphids on Friday. For the most part, producers are starting to see soybean aphids in the field. And so for growers who might want to spray, keep in mind that your threshold, your economic threshold, and that means when you see 250 aphids per plant, that's the time you need to start worrying about there are enough aphids there to do economic damage, which means yield loss. Do I spray or do I wait to see if the beneficials like lace wings and Asian lady beetles progress and balance it out by controlling that particular pest? The way soybean aphids work is they like to literally suck the sap from the new growth on the soybean plants, thus reducing the plant's overall health and their potential for yield. Because we had some changes in the insecticide market over the last couple of years, not all our familiar names and brands are available for use for soybean aphids. If you are curious, this is a list of products that's registered for use specific to Minnesota. And this will probably be very similar for North Dakota and South Dakota, but you're going to want to double check with your Department of Ag. Your local retailers will know that those names if they need to. They'll help you out. Duraguard, Pilot, Warhawk, Drexel's Chlorpyrifos 15G 4E, and Lambdafos, Matchup and Govern. These are all insecticides registered for use specifically to Minnesota, but likely so in North Dakota and South Dakota as well for soybean aphid control. So check those out if you are planning on spraying. Okay, that's a
Take
lot.
A breath.
Sorry, Dean. Had a lot come in this morning, a lot of questions for people. And we don't get to take too much of a breath because when we come back from the American Ag Network, we will be joined by our guest today. Her name is Riley Rickford. Riley, if I get this wrong, I don't think I will, though. Her school district is the Glendon Felton School District. She does a lot of things. She is a Minnesota State Beef Ambassador. She is in the FFA chapter, getting her projects ready to go to the Minnesota State Fair. And her family also helps supply fresh beef to her local school district. So I'm excited to hear about all those things that Riley does. She and I ran into each other at a high-level farm economy meeting here about 3 weeks ago. I also want to know what Riley thought about that meeting, what she learned from all the notes we took. So it should be an exciting next segment with her. We'll be back with Riley Rickford. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us. It's always an exciting afternoon because you just never know what we have to talk about today. And also, what might be coming up this week? Well, one of those things is I will be out in the field with Ellingson Drainage. They are one of our Here We Grow sponsors. We're going to try to get a video done because it rained a little bit, Dean. You gave me some more moisture to work with coming off those tile pumps. So I'll see what I can do there. We're going to do a nice quick video about what's going on in the field these days so we can keep everybody up to speed. Maybe when we're done, we can all get together for a little beverage. North Dakota Sweet Crude definitely would fit the bill. It is a great summer relaxing drink. And don't forget that you can get it with not only its original flavor, but Sweet Crude Orange as well. If you are looking for samplings, you can do that this week. August 8th will be at the Bottle Barn Liquors on South University. August 9th at the Silver Sage Pro Rodeo in Clitheroe, Minnesota. And it'll still be at the rodeo on August 10th. So check them out. You got a couple of rodeos to get to. Bottle Barn Liquors. Never know when you have the opportunity to make sure you have North Dakota Sweet Crude. Whew. Oh, and gosh, Dina, I can't forget one more thing. I did. We have free lunch for teachers on Wednesday.
That's this Wednesday.
This Wednesday, August 14th.
Next Wednesday.
A free lunch. Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Yeah. Good, because it's supposed to rain this Wednesday.
Way to push that off.
Yeah,
nice.
Right?
There we go. This week, Wednesday, you could go listen to the what's going on at the North Dakota Soy Processors plant in Castleton. But then next week, especially if you're a teacher, you can come on in for lunch, and that'll be at our studios, WDAY and The Flag. We want to honor teachers and make sure that you stop by from 11 to 2 for lunch. There'll be food trucks, bouncy houses for kids, games, prizes, and a whole lot more. Thank you to our teachers for everything that you do. We greatly appreciate it. I don't know if you ever thought about teaching, Dean. Did that ever cross your mind?
You know, it did. I taught when I got out of the business of weather, when the economy crashed in 08, we'll make this brief. I went to work in the casino and I had to teach some of the new employees coming in about the department. And I suddenly realized that although I loved like educating people and teaching, I literally had a ruler in my hand and somebody was on their phone and I came up behind them and whack, hit the ruler down on the table and said, you got to start listening. So I'm afraid I'd be that kind of a teacher, and we don't need that. I'd be the
old
school.
I'll be honest. I student taught high school ag, and when they told me, and I know all the listeners out there are probably going to be horrified at this, but when they said, you know, if kids mouth off, you can't cuff them one like teachers could do to me.
Right, exactly.
Obviously, I'm not cut out to teach, so I'll go hang out with adults. That seems like a great idea. So here we are. But I bet this never happens to our guest today. I have a feeling she's very, very good in school, and I got her school wrong. She's at Barnesville. This is Riley Rickford. Riley, how are you today? I think Riley's there. We're going to make sure that Addison gets her sound on. There. Hi, Riley. How are you?
I'm doing good. And yourself?
Fabulous. Thank you for joining us today. We are excited to talk about all the things that you do. And now I finally got your school right over at Barnesville. So tell us about your family operation and what year you are in school.
Yep. So I'll be a sophomore in the fall at Barnesville High School. On our ranch, we have just under 200 head of Angus Hereford cattle that we use to keep our own replacements, and then we also do some quarter beef for families. And then, like you said earlier, we do all of the burger for both Barnesville and DGF schools.
Wow. Okay.
She's busy.
Go ahead, Dean.
She's busy. Sophomore. Now, Riley, from what I understand, your family supplies beef for your local school district. Is that correct?
Yep.
How does that work? I mean, gosh, I wish we were lucky enough in our small town that we had a local beef supplier. I mean, is that common in some of the smaller areas, smaller cities?
Yeah, I would say it's fairly common just coming from the producer side. In our schools, we get it to them through the farm to plate program. So we'll raise all of the beef and then they'll go into a USDA inspected locker and then we'll pick it up and bring it back to the school for them.
Wow. So Riley, do your classmates know that y'all supply the beef for your school and do they talk to you about that?
Oh, I've definitely made it known. I take great pride in being able to deliver a good product to my classmates and whatnot. I guess I haven't had a lot of people come up to me and say, wow, this is really good, or wow, that sucks, but I guess it's a good thing.
I'm really glad they didn't say anything bad.
Yeah.
Okay. This maybe is a little too far to the side, but you know, I've had beef cattle as well. And so do you name them so you can sit down at lunch and say, this was my favorite. This was my favorite animal, and his name was.
Okay, so we actually do name them. All of our cow or our feeder beef get the name Delilah. So then every day I can walk through the lunch line and say, "Gee, how's it going, Delilah?" And then I can thank the lunch ladies, and it's such a smile on everyone around me's face. It's so much fun.
Oh, I love that you do that. That's awesome. So, okay. So Riley does a lot of things, but before we get to her work with Beef Ambassador in Minnesota, as well as the State Fair, Riley and I met, first of all, I know her mom, but then she and I met in person. We were at Bell Banks Ag Views meeting earlier in July, where we listened to Dr. David Cole, who's a retired professor emeritus from Virginia Tech, as well as their senior vice president for ag banking, talk about global trends in the marketplace. So Riley, as someone who's about to be a sophomore, what do you remember that stood out to you about that meeting? Were there any notes that you took that you said, you know, I really want to remember this particular item?
Yeah, so a lot of the notes were ones I kind of looked over my shoulder and was like, gee, I should write those down too. But I guess a lot of it was over my head, but I did get a lot of really cool things about it and how the market works outside of beef. I guess a lot of that I didn't understand before, but now I can say I understand it a little bit.
Do you feel pretty excited about what's going to be happening with the beef market and the future ag economy here over the next few years, or are you cautious?
I think it's definitely something to be wary of. Cattle markets are high right now, so you have to question how much higher they're going to get before they absolutely tank. But with that, I think you have to be kind of aggressive with it.
All right. I don't think you're wrong. And I like the fact that you're paying attention to the beef market, because it sounds to me like you definitely want to be involved. And some of that involvement shines through in other things that you do. So we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to touch on the local news. And so, Riley, when we come back, we want to visit with you about what it took to become a Minnesota Beef Ambassador as a high school student. And then also, you're going to get ready for the Minnesota State Fair. And what does that entail? Because it's just not a simple process. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll continue our visit with Riley Rickford of Barnesville. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. Our special guest today is Riley Rickford. She's a Minnesota Beef Ambassador and FFA student preparing for the Minnesota State Fair. Riley, got one question for you here. So being a Minnesota Beef Ambassador, is there any specific GPA or anything like that that you have to maintain to be able to keep that title?
No. So to be a Beef Ambassador, first of all, you have to actually make it on the team. The application process has an interview, a social media post, things like that. And then as long as you stay active in the team and make sure you stay on top of your social media posts and your activity logs, you'll be able to stay on the team for the year and in the end get your scholarship.
Gotcha. And you've got the Minnesota State Fair coming up. Is this your first time participating in that? And what does that involve?
So it's not quite my first time. I've been down to the Minnesota State Fair for 4-H the last 2 years. This will be my first trip as an FFA member.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so I want to back up just a little bit to you and your beef ambassador, Riley. You said there's an application project. Okay, having done that, what are the duties now that you have to do with that team? And are you only on for a year? What's your length of term with it?
So a Beef Ambassador's term is 1 year, and then you can get another year as long as you're under 19. And then if you did the best out of your team, you'd be the peer mentor. So that would be your last year, and your job would be to advise the team throughout the next year, helping as needed.
Okay. So as part of the team, are you traveling a lot as a team? Are you all presenting individually? What are some of the things that you have to do there?
Yep. So with the ambassadors, they've always said whatever you put in, you're going to get out. So I can do traveling, but being up where I'm at, a lot of it is down in the southern counties. So I haven't gotten to do a lot of traveling yet. I'd like to later in my term. Right now, a lot of what I've been doing is stuff by myself, social media posts. Some of the other ambassadors have been able to get out and help pass out ribbons and whatnot at different county fairs. And they've been active in, like, one of them has been active at their town's Watermelon Days. So getting out and doing stuff like that, but then also working at the team later.
So really, you get to volunteer. So if Clay County Fair had called you and said, Riley, we need your help, you would have been up for it.
Definitely.
That's awesome. Now, Riley, out of all the events that you've gone to as a Beef Ambassador, what's your favorite and least favorite?
My favorite activity I've done, I was at the Red River Valley Fair here over 4th of July weekend, and I had my calf. Her name is Rumley. And at Walmart, I went and I bought a whole bunch of beads and glasses and bows and all that stuff, and I dressed her up, and I got to take her out into the public, and the look on some of them kids' faces, their jaw just dropped. It was awesome. So then I get to talk up with them and say, yep, this is Rumley. This is how old she is. And then I got to just talk about my passion. You asked about my least favorite event. I guess I've enjoyed them all. I haven't had a bad experience with the ambassadors yet, and hopefully I never will.
That's awesome.
I hope not either.
Right.
Now, for the ambassadors, do you all represent different breeds? Or can you know, you've got a big mix of folks who are Angus or, you know, Charlet or Limousine or whomever. Does it matter?
Nope. So ambassadors, we promote beef for the Minnesota Cattlemen's, Cattlewomen's, and the Minnesota State Beef Council. And so I guess it really doesn't matter what breed you come from, as long as you share that same passion as everybody else does.
Well, I think you have the passion. So when you dressed up Rumley and you were leading her through the crowd of people, what was the most frequent question that folks asked you?
What's her name? How old is she? What breed is she? That kind of, is it a boy or a girl? Those kinds of questions.
All right. So is Rumley going to the state fair?
Yep, she is. Her and her mom will go down as a pair, and then I have another heifer that'll take down as well.
Okay. This is not a small undertaking. I read snaps and posts from people who are parked in line at like 2 a.m. to get into the fair to unload. Walk us through, Riley, what you are doing now from your county fair until you get to the state fair, and what's that whole process look like? What do you have to do to prepare, and what do you have to do once you get there?
Oh, really, when you think about it, it's basically just a rinse and repeat. All of them get to go sit under a fan so they stay cool, and they grow their hair, and they get baths once or twice a day, and they eat expensive food and take all the money out of my pockets, or I guess my mother's pockets, because I'm her broke best friend.
So, okay, when you say rinse and repeat, like literally, what are you loading into the trailer? Because you've got half of your audience today, Riley, probably has no idea what it takes to take an animal to the state fair. What are you putting in the trailer? Do you have to provide feed for all the days that you're down there? And being your mom's broke best friend, what does mom have to supply?
So obviously there's your entry fees to actually get in and be at the exhibition. I think it's $20 a head. So it's not too bad compared to some of the other shows we've attended. And then you've got all of your expenses, feed, your hose, your buckets, feed pans, all that stuff that, you know, you just kind of have to have. And then we like to get extra fancy, so we buy our $17 a can adhesives and paints and all that stuff so we can pretty them up for show day.
Hold on. Paint and adhesive. What are you doing to that cow?
So we do what's called fitting legs. And we take it. The adhesive is kind of like hairspray, and we'll get the hair to all stand up to add some extra bone and dimension to, in this case, my heifer.
Okay. And the spray paint?
The spray paint. So the glue, if you put enough of it in, it'll turn white. And so, like, my heifer's got black legs, so they'll start to look gray. So then you have to paint over it with kind of like spray paint, but it's really completely different. So then we'll get it back to the black it was originally.
It's like when we were in the 80s when someone would like spray color into their hair for Halloween, et cetera. That's kind of what you're doing. When you are down there, how many days are you down at the fair? And tell me about how your day starts, like on show day, when you're going to show her, when you're going to show Rumley. How early are you up? What are the steps you've got to go through that day just to get her ready to go?
So we're at the state fair. Labor Day weekend is the FFA exhibition. And then show day, I'm not 100% sure what time the show starts at, but I think it's 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock or sometime around there. But we'll end up getting to the barns probably around 5:30, 6 o'clock, just so we can skip over all of that morning traffic. And then it'll be a matter of getting the cattle fed, getting them washed, blowed, and then kind of waiting for that sweet spot time so that way we can get their legs stood up like I was talking about earlier and they won't lay down on us and wreck it. So at that point, it's it's a matter of keeping them happy.
So, Riley, it's like getting ready for the prom, except you don't want them to mess anything up that you just did to them, right?
Exactly.
Okay. As a kid who was back and forth to the North Dakota State Fair, I didn't get to show, but I was there. So a couple of questions for you. Are you guys staying in the barns like we did at the North Dakota State Fair? Are you staying in your trailers? You're close by. Who takes care of the animals at night? Is there security and so forth?
Yep. So we'll be staying at a hotel that's, I think, within 20 minutes of there. I would stay in the barns, but I've heard that they're really loud and hot and I would like to sleep, so I won't be doing that this year. As far as security and whatnot, they have the fairgrounds locked up at night, and at that point, we just hope that the cattle stay tied in their tie-out spots and nobody jumps over the fence and gets into them.
That would be best, because even as docile as those animals are, because you've handled them and worked with them so much, when there's somebody new around, that can really be agitating. So I understand your concern about something getting in to upset the animals, because there's too many of them around, right, for that bad thing to happen.
Exactly.
So, Riley, are you taking anything besides Rumley and her mom and another cow down to the fair? Do you have static exhibits or any other animals that are within the family that are going?
I don't have anything else. We're going to be trailering with a couple other of my friends from the Barnzilla Bay chapter as well. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. We're all basically closely related, but not related at all.
So Riley, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bridget. I'm sorry.
No, I just think Riley's going to have a great time down there at the fair.
Right. No doubt. Now, Riley, I mean, you've got a few years of school left. What are your plans after you graduate? Are you going to stay and work on the family farm? What would you like to do?
So, I still have time to think about it. I would like to, in the end, attend SBSU for animal science and ag communications, and then, assuming I'm good enough, I'd like to be on their livestock judging team.
Nice.
I'd like the way you say that, assuming I'm good enough, because it's tough competition. It is not easy to get on those judging teams at a collegiate level. So I just wish you the best. I think that's awesome.
Go ahead, Bridget.
Well, Riley, okay, as you are wrapping up here today, you have social media that you mentioned for Minnesota Beef Ambassadors. Where can folks find you so they can follow along with your story and also whatever's happening with Rumley? Because I have a feeling there's some pictures of her all dressed up hanging out at the fair.
Yep, so the Minnesota State Beef Ambassadors team is on Facebook and Instagram. And I have my own YouTube channel where I'm trying to make my steer famous so we can keep him, but I end up throwing everybody else on there too, because I think that a lot of people enjoy seeing cows running around and whatnot.
Okay, if you will be so kind as after you get off the show today, Riley, send me the link for your YouTube channel so I can add it to our show notes today so other people can come and follow you as well. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that works for me.
All right. That would be excellent. So Riley Rickford, thanks for joining us today, talking about what you're doing as a sophomore, getting ready to go to the fair and participate for your year as a Minnesota Beef Ambassador. Good luck. Happy cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you guys.
Thanks, Riley.
Thank you. All right, folks. Last check of the weather and news and so forth is still coming up. Don't go anywhere. We want to make sure to touch base with all of you so you know what's coming in this great week of weather.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:50 in the afternoon. Still some light rain showers in and around the FM area. Very light. Most of the heaviest stuff now pressing off towards Purim. And down to Battle Lake and over towards Wadena. That's where the heaviest rain is now falling. Back edge of the rain still out around the Valley City area. So we'll be in the clouds and maybe a few light sprinkles, but the majority of the accumulating rain, at least here in the FM area, is pretty much done and over with. And we've picked up so far around Cass County about a quarter, just under a quarter of an inch. Much of the same out towards Yulin, Sabin, between about 2/10 and a quarter of an inch. And as I said, the heavier amounts down in the far southern valley, Wahpeton and south of Wahpeton. And then areas around Elbow Lake, Herman, and down towards Westport, picking up anywhere between 2 and 2.5 inches of rainfall, while the northern valley not picking up hardly anything at all. In fact, only 0.02 of an inch. Around the Grand Forks area and out around Jamestown, only about a little over 0.1 of an inch. So most of it confined just to the south of the FM area. But you know what? Even a quarter inch, at least my lawn is going to be pretty happy with that.
Things are coming back. Looking much better.
A little bit. This will probably bring back the weeds too, unfortunately. So,
yeah, but, that's a given.
Yeah, got a give and take. Give and take a little bit.
I mean, I hate to tell you this, Dean, but that weed thing ain't going away pretty soon.
I know. So we've got some ag topics to talk about. I'll let you pick out the first one there, Bridget.
Oh, we've got a bunch of things. So first of all, if you remember back probably a year ago or better, we had a guest on, and that was the Sproul sisters from Grand Forks, North Dakota. They have their own pasta plant here in North Dakota, or pasta brand, and it's called Three Farm Daughters. And they really are farm daughters from the region who went ahead and decided to build a better pasta. And so this is contrived of just two items. It is wheat flour and durum wheat semolina. No additives, no preservatives. Justin and I both taste tested it and really liked it. Mm. It's a high fiber prebiotic pasta. And for those who are looking for it locally, you certainly can, Hornbacher's, Cashwise, etc. But they also have been making a splash nationally with Safeway, Albertsons, and Whole Foods. So that again is Three Farm Daughters, and they are the Sproul sisters from up near Grand Forks. They have been happily bringing new pasta products such as penne, rotini, elbow, and now even spaghetti noodles to the market for all of us to enjoy.
And you said it was a prebiotic.
Prebiotic, yes. We all talk about probiotics, but right. This is a prebiotic.
Interesting.
Well, what's the difference? I'm going to have to do some research because off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay. That's okay. Well, hey, let's touch on, and this is affecting everybody. I don't care who you are. The painful surge on grocery prices. You know, I went the other day and I just like, what happened? Just even compared to a year or 2 years ago, it's just, I mean, it's amazing. The pricing.
So really, our pricing at the grocery store was stable from 2014 to 2019, but from 19 to 2020, so into the pandemic, prices rose about 4%. Then from 20 to 21, it was up another 6%. From 21 to 22, it jumped another 12%. So you're looking at a 25% increase from fourth quarter of 2019 until the first quarter of 2023. And that was a year and a half ago. So we already have increases since then. What's doing it? Well, the underlying factor would be the commodity prices, especially grains. They saw significant increases, and that fell down to beef, pork, poultry, eggs, dairy, because all of the animals eat those grains. Right now, we have a low in commodity prices. Will we see food prices drop? They don't correlate that quickly. So even though we have low commodity prices, we're not going to see reduced grocery store prices within a week or anything like that, because the grains that were purchased and are in processing, that price is still traveling on to the consumer. We've also seen the wages at supermarkets rise substantially. Reason we had to do that was getting more people to work. You saw quite a bit of dollars going towards not just purchasing of food supplies to be putting on the shelves, but the wages that went with them. So right now, can we say that things are going to fall? Not really sure, but we're going to have to keep an eye out for them. But we all know that we are paying more. Previously, I've done a Ag in the Classroom visit for fourth graders across the state, talking about North Dakota's agricultural economy. And at the time, so this would have been easily pre-pandemic, we talked about for every $100 that Americans spends, $10 was spent on food. And that was really low compared to France, which was in the 30s, or Japan, which was spending well over 70% of their average dollars on food. Now we see that we are gaining ground very quickly to some of those other countries.
All right. I'm going to dive a little into the weeds on this, Bridget. So bear with me as you roll your eyes, I'm sure. But
you can hear it already.
I can hear it already. A lot of people will blame the higher prices, the higher grocery prices, on whatever president is in power. How much of that is reality? How much? I mean, you said, you know, grains and prices with that make a big difference, but
there's certainly some political affiliations to that. But when I think about not just what's happening at the farm level for a commodity price, you also have to think about the fact that transportation costs are up tremendously as well, because what we were paying pre-pandemic for fuel, diesel or gasoline, was substantially less than what we're paying today. That affects the transportation of our food. When that happens, I often think that the price of crude and so forth is inflated or deflated much more politically than it really is by supply or demand. That's a personal opinion. The rest of you can go argue your politics however you want. So transportation's a big part of it.
Right.
And then we also have what's being imported, because think about, was it Christmas 2020 when we had all the jokes about having to take jet skis out to the tanker ships to or cargo ships to bring your Christmas gifts back that you ordered?
Right.
Same thing. You have overseas transportation costs that affected what we're getting in food pricing. Input costs on food, fertilizer that was being shipped into the country at a higher level. So all of that probably affects us even more so than what we think about as a commodity price. And I look at transportation costs as directly affected by politics.
Interesting. So that's a pretty general and easy to understand breakdown, yeah. Though. It is.
That's just me. That's just the way I think of it. I'm sure someone has an argument differently, but you know, then dude, feel free to bring that up on your own show.
There you go. And how about we hit, we've got about a minute left here. French farmer protests. What's going on over in France?
Well, they haven't slowed down, but the French are very upset with their whole farm to fork initiative. And this is part of the Green Deal that's been happening over there. What they're being told is that they will have to reduce their pesticide use by 50% by the year 2030. That's really only 5 growing seasons away. Folks don't have a problem reducing their pesticide use if there are viable alternatives. Currently, there are not viable alternatives for many of the things that the French government wants to do in order to follow the directives by the EU. When that happens, you now have yield loss. When you have yield loss, you don't have enough food, fiber, etc. to support your own country. And so farmers are going to be losing money. There will be less food availability for the French. And there are greater concerns, just as we've been talking about food inflation and so much more. So French farmers are very upset. They say, we can do this, but we can't do it in 5 years. We need a better timeline. And that hasn't been a well thought out process at this point either.
So you mean this Green Deal that keeps trying to get pushed quicker and quicker isn't quite working?
Gee, imagine that. God!
Wow.
Right.
What a shock. Well, for Bridget and myself, we want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The number one show, number one afternoon show, the Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.